Good afternoon. Time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Friday, Food Friday, February 21st. Rick Orlando's here, and he's already causing trouble. Rick is a chef, an entrepreneur, writer, leader of culinary tours of Italy. Today, here in the dark heart of winter, we'll talk about soups and stews. And of course, Rick is ready to answer your food and cooking questions of any stripe. You want to talk to Rick Orlando? Frankly, he's already been troublesome, and he's only been here like a minute. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. We have already gotten an email from Ipanema, and we'll tell you about that coming up. It's a question, nothing about our topic today. But if you have a question about soups and stews, 800-348-2551. We'll be back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we welcome back Chef Rick Orlando. Rick is the owner of the Richter Scale brand, makers of Rick Orlando's best line of hot sauce, barbecue sauce, custom spice rubs, including the legendary Purple Haze psychedelic hot sauce. Rick is an instructor, chef instructor for Capital Region and Kingston area not-for-profits. Rick writes a monthly column in Sante Food and Wine magazine. He hosts pop-up dinners all over the region monthly. Rick also takes small groups on immersive food, farm, and wine culture tours of Sicily, sometimes New Orleans, although I think it's been a while. If you have a question for Rick Orlando, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Emusive. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
What's
emusive,
happening, man?
Yes, this is an emusive conversation we're having.
So far. I mean, what's up? What's going on?
You know, I'm a busy guy. Yeah. I've got a pop-up tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah? Where?
At the Den on Delaware Avenue. It's part of Nicole's Catering. They're a little small venue, seats about 35.
Hmm.
I'm doing a pre-Mardi Gras party with three types of oysters, three types of gumbo jambalayas.
Oh, nice.
We're doing some mustard catfish. I have Boudin stuffed pork belly. I've been prepping all day yesterday.
So this month has an R in it, so the oysters are fine. Isn't that the old rule?
That's an old rule, but now 90% of the oysters, maybe even 100% of the oysters that are in the market, are farmed in the sea on like pallets, basically. So it doesn't make that big of a difference, but something interesting about oysters that I like to talk about is when it gets very cold out, you want to move a little further south. Because when they get too cold, like say in New Brunswick, they go into a hibernation mode. You'll notice the oysters won't be plump and round.
Oh,
they'll
interesting.
Be more flat. Where if you go to Jersey, Long Island, even Chesapeake Bay, you'll see a little more plumper oyster because the water is not quite as cold.
That is fascinating. I never knew that. And Rick Orlando, so this thing's sold out though, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
so
we could probably squeeze two more in because that's how I am.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you going to do that?
Call me up. Let's do it. Call the Den.
All right.
I made plenty of food.
Today's topic, of course, is, and you brought the topic up, is stews and soups. And it's a great idea.
And you know what's funny? When we talked about that a week ago, I said, you know, I told Ray we're going to do soups and stew. That means it's going to be 75 degrees the day I show up at the studio.
No way,
but
brother.
It didn't work.
I'll tell you, this month, and I grew up around here. I know you're a Connecticut guy, right? But I grew up around this area, and I should be used to it. I shouldn't complain.
Mm-hmm.
But this month, the last bit of January and all of this month, they're lousy. The weather's been bad.
You know, I've been living upstate now for 35 years, 34 years. This is what I remember winter to be like. The last 3 or 4 years were so mild. I bought this really cool, like, electrical battery-charged snowblower, and up until this year, I used it twice.
Yeah.
I never used it. I used it like a vacuum cleaner. So now, you know, it's winter. I mean, we live upstate. We chose to live here.
I know. Well, actually, I grew up, I mean, I was born here, so yeah, I really didn't have a choice.
35 years is a long time. I mean, I remember the storm of 97 when we had that October blizzard and we were stranded.
87, wasn't it?
It was 87.
Yeah.
I was stranded at my brother-in-law's house with my brand new baby. She was only a few months old and my wife, and they were stranded in Rentsville. And that was my day to become a man. I had to go split wood and start a fire and the whole routine.
We didn't have power for over a week, I think.
That was fun.
Also, the blizzard of, I think, 93. I was in Westchester.
That was a good one.
It was a monster.
Yeah.
I remember driving up and down Route 684, which had been closed, trying to get from the radio station to my apartment, and there was nobody on 684 but me. And I don't think anyone has ever seen 684 completely empty before.
That's wild.
The number to call here if you want to talk about traffic is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is our guest today. You know, before we get going on your topics of soups and stews, and you're fancier than most. Let's talk about chicken soup.
Yeah.
Every mom, every grandma has got their own recipe for
every
chicken
culture. Every culture in the world has a variation on chicken soup.
My mother-in-law used to say, you got sick? This is nature's medicine, she would say. Now my wife says it to my kids, too. But it does seem to work.
It's comfort food, for sure. It's got a lot of trace nutrients. So chicken soup is actually really easy to make. And I think that some people make really great chicken soup. A lot of people make too much out of it. You need chicken. You need the three big vegetables, well, two big vegetables, celery, an onion and carrot, big three, and then an herb. And then if you want to put potatoes or pasta or rice, you do that near the end. The big question, the big culinary debate is stock or broth?
Okay, now explain. Now, believe it or not, I don't know the difference. So why don't you explain it to me?
So stock is like a what they call bone broth now because generationally everybody has to rename everything.
But
it's basically stock, right?
Okay.
Stock is a bone-based long-cooked liquid, taking the marrow and the nutrients from the bones and cooking them, calcium, into the stock. A brodo is based on meat and bone. So, for instance, when I make chicken soup, I buy whole chickens. I don't buy parts, you know.
Okay.
But I'll split a chicken in half, and I'll throw half a chicken in a pot of water that I pre-salted just enough, like just, not salty, but just so you can taste that there's salt in it. And I just bring that to a boil and let it simmer for about a half an hour to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I'm making brodo. I'm making chicken broth. I'm getting the flavor of the meat, the skin, and the bones. And then I'll dice up my carrots, my celery, my onions, put them in another pot. And when that is chicken is done, I'll just strain that liquid onto my mirepoix, carrot, celery, onion, and pick an herb.
Why do you say pick an herb?
Well, because some people throw all kinds of herbs in there, and it gets diluted. So if I'm doing like more of a French-style chicken soup, I'll use thyme. If I'm doing more of a Jewish grandmother's, I'll use a little dill, maybe a pinch of parsley. If I'm doing Italian, I'll use parsley. I try to keep the flavors kind of pure.
Parsley is what we do in our house.
Yeah, and then I'll take, once that chicken is cooled off that I boiled, I'll take the meat off, I'll throw it in the soup. Bring it to a nice simmer. When the vegetables are done, I can add potatoes, I can add pasta, I can add rice. I usually do that on the side. The potatoes I'll cook in the soup, but everything else in the side. And you have chicken soup, and that's it. Now, you can get funky, you can do curry, you can do sofrito, you can do all these great flavors, but that is a basic chicken soup.
Chef Rick Orlando is our guest today. It's soups and stews in this cold winter. 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's talk about the skin for a minute of the chicken and the fat. I have been told, again, I'm neither a cook nor a chef.
But you're an expert.
Nor a doctor. But I've been told that the fat, the chicken fat, is where the restorative and helpful powers are.
Absolutely. And this is an interesting thing to discuss. We are in a culture of enormous wealth for an extended period of time, which means we get all the calories we need. We're never hungry. No, that's not true. A lot of Americans are hungry.
True.
I take that back.
That
I actually am running a soup kitchen.
Stop. Just hold the thought. You're running a soup kitchen.
I'm now the ED or president of the Good Neighbor Food Pantry in Woodstock, New York.
So, when do you have time to do good things like that?
I always do that. I've been working with the food bank for 30 years. And when I got nominated, I said, let's do it. So, you know, we're in there. And we don't serve cooked food. We have groceries, basically, but we also supply other places that do cook food.
How do people find out about this if they want to?
Good Neighbor Food Pantry of Woodstock, New York. We're online. The website's kind of clunky. We're going to fix it up. But
yeah.
We're one of Ulster County's more active food pantries, you know?
Man, you're going to get a medal or something. All right, now back to the topic at hand before we hit
the
break.
So the fat in soup, if you go to Mexico, South America, Puerto Rico, different parts of the Caribbean, if you go to Mediterranean, they don't skim the fat off the soup because that is, it's immense value, that fat.
Yeah.
Now, we've been trained to be afraid of fat in America, but good fat is actually a good thing. I mean, you don't want to spoonfuls of fat into your mouth, but those little pearls of fat that float on the top are really good. And I'm going to tell you, everyone talks about crispy chicken skin. Now, we all love crispy chicken skin, but I learned from a Vietnamese cook years ago that when you boil the chicken, that slurpy, silky skin is really delicious.
So interesting.
It slurps right up, you know?
Hey, let's agree really not to good. Make that sound again on the show. Rick Orlando's our guest. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We'll take a quick break. We'll check the email bag. We'll get to the phones. It's soups und stews today. We'll be back. I love that album. That's John Harrington, the Steely Dan guitar player for about the last 20-plus years.
That slightly muted tone, right? God.
Okay, so that record I think is called, I can't remember. Time on My Hands, I think, is the name of the album. But that was Caroline, yes. Anyway, just a tremendous guitar player, and he played the Linda one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and funny story. The last time I've done a public appearance, which I'm going to talk about the upcoming public appearance in a little bit. But went over there. I was hanging out. My brother and I were hanging out, and we're having a couple martinis at my house. And then somebody called and said, "Can you come introduce John Harrington?" Well, somebody drove me over, and I introduced John Harrington. And it might have had a couple. It might not have been the best plan, but I made it quick.
But you were uninhibited.
It was what a show, though. All right, number here is 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando's our guest. Very quickly, back to chicken soup, and then we'll move to stews. In my house, and in my experience, the chicken soup always tastes better the second day. Is there a scientific and empirical reason for that? Second, third, like the first day it's great, but after that.
I mean, think of all your vegetables and even your chicken in there kind of like a tea bag. So as it cools, it's absorbing more of the enzymes and minerals. And then as you reheat it, it stirs them up. So, yeah, I guess so. I mean, I like it first day. I like it the second day. I actually freeze it. I have a whole freezer door full of little quart containers of leftover soups because, you can never make soup for two.
Oh, my gosh. My wife makes a huge vat of the stuff.
And I've gotten it down to making about a half a gallon at a pop now. But, yes, you know. But soup, this time of year, I mean, there's so many great ways to make soup, right? We talked about chicken soup. One of the things I do in the summer when the farmers markets are bursting with so many stuff that I can't eat it all.
Yeah.
I buy Roma beans, wax beans, I buy broccoli, I buy different vegetables from farm stands, and I take them home and quickly blanch them and freeze them so I have my own frozen vegetables.
Smart.
And then literally, I mean, you can make vegetable stock, but you can buy a box of vegetable broth, put them in the broth with maybe a few basil leaves, maybe a few parsley leaves, bring it to a simmer. Stir in a little pesto. You've got a fantastic summery tasting soup in the middle of winter.
Vegetable broth. I didn't know vegetables had bones. How do you make that?
Well, the same way you make anything else. You simmer different vegetables, onions, carrots, sometimes mushroom stems, et cetera, and extract the flavor.
Yeah, Rick Orlando's our guest today. 800-348-2551. Let's grab a call. Then we'll hit stews and what you brought here. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Andrew in Poughkeepsie. Andrew, you're on.
Hi, Andrew.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Good to hear. I love soups. I adore soups. I can make a roasted carrot soup and a roasted squash soup that have no dairy in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering how I might do that with broccoli or asparagus.
Well, I think one of the secrets is cashew cream. Are you good with nuts? Can you eat nuts?
Yes, fine.
So we used to use this at the restaurant a lot to make creamy soups vegan. Is you would get, for instance, to make, make a quart of cashew cream, you would take two and a half cups of raw cashews, not salted, not roasted, raw cashews, put them in a container and pour equal amount or slightly more of hot water on them, and let's let them sit on the counter overnight.
Mm.
The next day, run them through your blender until they're smooth as silk, and you have cashew cream. You just whisk that into your soup. That's going to give you that. One of the other ways, one of the French ways, is you take some of the product that you made in your soup out and you puree that in the blender and add it back to give it like a thick creaminess without any dairy. But I love cashew cream in soup. It's as rich as heavy cream. It gives you a beautiful body, especially with broccoli.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So if you are lactose intolerant, that's also a good thing.
But cashew cream is the closest thing to like dairy cream in your mouth. It's so high
that
fat.
That would be in addition to the vegetable stock that I'm using?
Sure, yeah. If you're making a cream of broccoli soup, you're going to cook it in vegetable stock, thicken it to your liking, and then add your cream near the end and let it cook. So yeah, the same thing. You would add this near the end, bring it up to heat, adjust your flavoring, maybe hit it with a little bit of fresh nutmeg, and you'd have a beautiful cream of broccoli soup with cashew cream.
All right, Andrew, thanks a lot for the call. The number here, if you want to talk to Chef Rick Orlando, and who doesn't, 800-348-2551. Before we get to the next call, talk a little about stews. What's this stuff here?
That's called guisado, pork guisado. So that's like a pork stew. It's Dominican style.
Oh, man.
It's made with a sofrito base.
All right, what is sofrito?
So sofrito in Latin cooking, and it's a base for a lot of their dishes, is, as opposed to the Italian sofrito, which is different, the Latin sofrito is, you could do it in a mortar and pestle if you're old school or in a Cuisinart food processor, onion, garlic, bell pepper, cilantro.
Oh,
and you make a paste.
Cilantro, huh?
And you don't really taste cilantro, you taste Latin food. It is the distinct flavor in ropa vieja and all those arroz con pollo, all those dishes that you know the flavor of, that's your base. And you saute it. It's not delicious raw. It tastes like raw vegetables. But when you saute it, the aroma fills your whole house. And you're like, oh my God, I'm in the DR right now. And then you add you brown your pork. You can add some potatoes, some liquid, and you let it cook.
For how long?
Until your pork tender, 1 or 2 hours. Okay. Of course, cover it with water. Here's a good trick. When you need to brown meat for a stew, all the recipes say, put the meat in the pot, season it, brown it, take it out. Well, if you're making a lot, sometimes your meat doesn't fit in the pot. It steams. It doesn't give off enough flavor. So what I do is I take my cubes of meat, whether it's pork or lamb or beef or whatever,
yeah,
and I season them with a little salt and pepper, and I crank my oven up to like, with the convection on, to like 475. Put them on a cookie sheet, throw them in the oven. Let them get nice and brown and toasty while I'm cutting my vegetables. Then when I put them in, I take the sheet pan that I cookie sheet, and I put a little hot water on it, and with a wooden spoon, I scrape up all those good brown bits, and I have all the flavor without having to sweat it in a pan. I find often, you know, when you put meat in a pan, unless you're really good at it or it's not crowded, it steams more than browns and it sticks.
Yep.
And it, pop it in the oven. Pop it in the
so
oven and toast it. And toast it good.
Now, this question from Germany, by the way, from Thomas, who writes in, this is about sofrito. What's the difference between a mirepoix and a sofrito?
Interesting. So sofrito in Latino is with the peppers, onions, garlic, cilantro. In Italian, sofrito is carrots, onions, and celery. In French, a mirepoix is also carrots, onion, and celery, and sometimes leeks. So there's not really a big difference in it. I think depending on what dish you're making, if you're making like a bolognese sauce, you want everything cut very, very small. So you don't really have chunks of carrot in it, but the flavor. And if you're making like a beef stew with a French twist, you want the carrots and stuff to be bigger,
yeah,
which is delicious. But those three flavors are the base, the foundation of both Italian and Northern Italian and French cooking. You know, in Northern Italy, there's very, very little garlic in the food, almost none. There are a few dishes that may feature garlic, like a garlic sauce, but for the most part, they don't use garlic.
Interesting. All right. Our buddy John Fisher writes in, who says,
John,
hey, gents, when I was a student way back at the CIA, it was when fresh herbs first started becoming available, and a lot of young cooks were using all of them. Chef Shack, our dean, referred to it as herbal warfare. Yeah, all right. I don't know if you want to comment on that.
Well, I mean, fresh herbs are readily available now. Like never before, and there are some herbs that I will insist upon only using fresh.
Yeah.
Basil, parsley, cilantro.
So the dried stuff, no good for you?
No. Dry basil is disgusting to me. It tastes like cafeteria food. Dry parsley is useless, and cilantro, I don't even know if they have.
I like cafeteria food, though.
Well, it depends on what kind of cafeteria food.
All right, okay.
Like the piece of white toast with that tomato sauce with dried basil and orange American cheese on it, that thing. Yeah,
yeah, Pennsylvania. I like the cream chip beef, too.
Yeah, yeah, well, chip beef's another animal.
Yeah.
But the twiggy herbs, thyme, rosemary, even bay leaves come to mind, that they have uses both fresh and dry.
Yeah.
So we grow a lot of thyme and rosemary at my house, so I'll actually tie them in bundles and dry it, so I have my own dry oregano, too. Oregano, I actually prefer dry, and I dry it and crumble it. I have my own stuff most of the year. But I call it bridging. So if I'm making a dish that I want to feature thyme, maybe a chicken stew with white wine, potatoes, real, like, you know, Lyon style, French style.
Yeah.
I will start with, in my mirepoix, carrots, onion, less celery in France. And once it's almost sauteed, I'll add dry thyme to it. Do my chicken, build the stew, brown the chicken, build my white wine, whatever I'm doing, maybe a little tomato paste, whatever's going in there. And when it's about 15 minutes from being done, then I'll add fresh thyme.
Ah.
And it bridges the flavor. It pops it back up. Same thing with rosemary. I don't buy dried rosemary because if you go to the supermarket and you buy one of those little plastic containers of fresh rosemary, it's always way more than you can use. So I just put it on a little screen on the counter till it's dry, crumble it, put it in a jar, and it's so much better, and it's not sulfured. A lot of the dried herbs, they use sulfur to keep them from getting bacteria.
Do they really?
Yeah, to keep them from getting bacteria when they dry. A lot of them are also irradiated. So just dry your own, and then you can do that little bridging trick if you have some fresh, because you'll notice that the perfume, when you add the dry, it builds this foundation of flavor, and then when you add the fresh, it gives you the aroma.
Brings it out. Our guest today is Chef Rick Orlando. It's Soups and Stews. It's 800-348-2551. What would be a Chef Rick Orlando appearance without our friend Joan in Schenectady?
Joan!
Hello, Joan!
Hello, hello, gentlemen. It is I. Good to be hearing your voices.
Good to hear you, Joan. How are you? Hold on.
I'm pretty well. Good to hear you, Joan.
How are you, darling?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm missing something.
No. Go ahead.
Hi, I am good. I can see that spring is coming, so I'm surviving.
I don't know what you're looking at.
I'm looking at the songbirds that are just starting to migrate through.
Yes.
I have to, like, really pay attention to start remembering spring. But yeah,
you can't stop
it. I want to give you something in your wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just starting to enjoy tomatoes better than I did when I was younger.
Okay.
So stews and soups and tomatoes, of course, you know, fresh tomatoes are not going to be here. So starting with canned tomatoes helped me build a decent Italian seasoning soup or stew, featuring, you know, tomato forward.
Well, so are you talking about, like, classic tomato soup or a stew with tomatoes? Because they're very different. One of my favorite things, and there's different Italian words for it, but it's basically a vegetable stew. But it's something that you would do when you have a lot of fresh vegetables in abundance in the summer. But you can still do it now is zucchini and potatoes and green beans, and you cut everything into slightly larger than bite-sized pieces, but you just saute your carrot, onion, and celery in extra virgin olive oil, maybe a clove of garlic, if you like that, and I do.
Only one clove? Oh,
yeah,
my goodness.
Yeah, because you're not making garlic soup. We can talk about garlic soup. That's a whole other animal. I love garlic soup.
We'll need a four-hour show at this rate.
And then you get a nice can.
You get the whole
tomatoes in a can. The whole tomatoes
right.
in a can. You
whole.
Dump them in a bowl, and you squish them with your fingers so they're kind of broken up and shredded. You dump in there with your vegetables. You cover it with about equal amounts of water to your tomatoes, with your green beans, your zucchini, your potatoes. And you cook maybe a fresh bay leaf, and you cook it at a low simmer until everything is done, and you literally eat that with a big hunk of bread as like a vegetable stew.
Okay.
So, you know, salt and pepper, obviously, if you want to put some fresh basil, or as the French make a soup called pistou, which is actually the pesto. You can do a pesto without the pine nuts and cheese, just basil, a little garlic, olive oil, salt, make your puree and drizzle that over it. It is actually really good with a little pecorino, too. But that's a great, great dish.
Okay. I wrote fast. I think I got it.
Well, you can always... You're not online, are you, Joan? Are you online?
No.
Okay, so you can't hear an archive of this show.
No, I'd be disappointed to know you're online.
Before I let you go, Joan, I just want to say your comments on the listener comment line today were beautiful. So thank you for what you said. It was nicely said. Thanks a lot. Have a great weekend. 800-348-2551. WAMC is the website, WAMC.org, that is. And you can email us at voxpop@WAMC.org. Here's an interesting one. We'll get back to the phones in a second. This is from Kim. Lamb stew. Rick, we have lots of cooked lamb leg left over from Christmas now in the freezer. Not sure what to do with it now. Little worried about it being a little funky second time around. Any ideas?
Sure. I mean, lamb leg has got a lot of flavor. It's got a little chew to it, but any type of lamb stew, especially at home, you can use that. Cube it up. How about a Guinness lamb stew, a nice Irish lamb stew, where you just saute potatoes, onions, and carrots with your lamb. You add a little salt and pepper, a little thyme, a can of Guinness, a small amount of tomato paste. Now, what I do, and this is very important, you never just throw tomato paste in. When I'm cooking my carrots, this in this particular dish, carrots, onions, potatoes, and a little butter, because I'm Irish now, right? I'm going butter.
Yikes.
I'll take a tablespoon of tomato paste and fry it in with those vegetables to caramelize it, to release the flavors.
Yeah.
Add my beer, obviously brown my lamb, season my lamb, add some Guinness. You can add a little water or a box of beef stock, let it come to a boil. So that's that. Now, if you want to thicken it, you could do one of two things. When you've sauteed all of your vegetables and your tomato paste, you can add a few tablespoons of flour to that and whisk them in and build it from there. Or you can thicken it later by making a roux, R-O-U-X, which is equal parts fat and flour that you cook in a skillet just for a few minutes. Now, obviously, if you're making gumbo or Cajun food, you cook it a lot longer, but just a few minutes to cook out the flour, and you add that a tablespoon at a time until you get the thickness you desire.
And the longer you cook it, the darker it gets? Is that how it
the
works?
The roux, yeah. And you can be careful not to burn it. Now, if I'm doing an Irish stew like that, I may add a couple of bay leaves or a sprig of thyme, like tie it in a little string and throw it in there, or some parsley. But yeah, that's really good. And the Guinness is nice because it's lower alcohol, and as it cooks down, it's not super hoppy. Right? So it's not going to get more bitter, where if you're doing a beer-based stew and you're using an IPA or something that's might really hoppy, it gets hoppier and gets too bitter. You want to go with a beer that's not lager. Quite as a lager or stout. You know?
Okay. Fair enough. This email from Serena, along the same lines, what's the best way to thaw soup after it has been frozen for a while so that it still tastes good?
Well, is one of the ways I do it is I put mine in little plastic quart containers, like what the Chinese soup comes when you take it, because I buy them wholesale. I have a whole case in the basement.
I believe it.
But I'll put it in a quart container. I will get a larger container and fill it with room temperature water and put my quart container in there and just leave it in the sink for a couple hours. That's not going to get – you're not going to hit the danger zone on that.
Okay.
And the other way, of course, is if you have a microwave. There are uses for microwave, and one of them is to thaw stuff. And you don't need to thaw it all the way. So you just need it to thaw it enough so it slides out of your container into your pot. And then when you're reheating it in the pot, even though it's frozen, add a little water. Because that water will evaporate, and you'll get your concentration of flavor back. But that water will help melt it. So that's easy. That's an easy one.
All right, we got 2 minutes here, Rick Orlando, before the next break. Let's go to Joanne in Gansvoort. And Joanne, you're on. Go ahead.
Hello, Joe.
Hi, Rick. It's so great to talk to you. I was at one of your demonstrations at Different Drummer many years ago, and I'm just hoping someday I can go to Sicily with you.
Okay.
But I had some farro soup in Siena many years ago, and I wonder if you have any farro soup ideas.
Well, I've made different soups with farro. Now, my wife is gluten-free, and she can eat a little of it. She's not celiac, but not much. The secret is to cook your farro, okay? Now, it is something that, in order to be digested properly, in order to not give you, like, flatulence to beat the band, it should be cooked, not al dente. So you want to boil your farro. One of the things that they do in Italy is they break it a bit before they cook it. So you can put it in your food processor and pulse it to break it up, or you can boil it, ample amounts of water until it's tender, kind of like wild rice, right? And then drain it and just put it in your food processor and break it up a bit. And then you build a soup with your typical Tuscan-based soup. It would be celery, carrot, onion, and olive oil. Sauté that, pinch of salt, whisk in your tomato paste, and then add your stock of choice. If you're making it vegetarian, you'd add vegetarian broth, vegetable broth, or just water, because Italians love water. They're cheaper than the French. Or chicken stock. Add your farro. I like a bay leaf, you know. And then when it's done, I like to spoon in a little bit of pecorino cheese and make a beautiful farro soup. But don't forget, it's going to expand and absorb, so don't put too much in there, because you'll end up with kind of a farro risotto as opposed to a soup.
Okay, and Joanne, we have to take a break here, but thanks very much. Rick Orlando is our guest. So the farro, if it's not cooked enough, gives you gas?
Well, yeah, just like any other grain, if it's al dente, it just kind of blows up in your belly.
Well, that explains a lot of things about
house. Yes, that's okay, right.
All right, listen, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Rick Orlando is our guest. We'll be back. So, the powers that be, the suits here at WAMC, have twisted my arm and said, Ray, you're going to do a live outing here at the station, and we're going... Okay, I haven't done a live radio thing in person in 30 years, okay? I was in my 20s when I did my last one. So... this is what it is. Vox Pop presents Uncle Grumpy Learns to Bake. Chef Gail Sokol and I will be at the Terrapin Restaurant in Rhinebeck on March 31st. Doors open 12:30, events 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. And we're going to tape this thing for later play, although it's sure to be a disaster. So if you like to watch train wrecks, do come. She's going to teach me how to bake, and I think it's a galette of some kind.
Oh, my.
I just don't know. I'm going to learn. Gail's great. She's very patient, but I got a feeling.
In an hour.
She's going to lose it on me. You can watch the show live. You can ask Gail questions. You can ask me questions, but I'll have no answers. And it'll be a culinary adventure. It's March 31st. And if you want to go, just go to WAMC.org. Believe it or not, it's a $50 pledge to go to this. So you're going to get to see me, Mr. Inept, try to bake for $50.
I have a question. I have a question for you.
What's that?
When I was younger, I went to a few events where a DJ who I listened to all the time was live.
Yeah.
And every time I saw them in person, I was like, oh, my God, that's what he looks like?
This is it. This is why I'm in radio. And I tried to tell them this. And they said, no, you got to go out there. I'm going to wear an apron.
Well, you have a radio face, right? That's what they call it.
Exactly.
You look great. Wear your Mets shirt. You'll be fine.
Emily, one of our wonderful pledgers and members, and she sent me during the last fund drive in October this apron, which I was sure I was never going to wear, that says Grumpy Old Man. So I'm going to break that out if my wife will be able to find it. It's somewhere in the house.
You know, you should go online and get some of those one-day fake tattoos and tattoo your arms up.
Really? Should I? Yeah, Chef Gail Sokol will probably love that. So anyway, if you want to find out more about this event, March 31st, and if you want to go.
I'll be there.
You're going to go.
Yeah.
It's $50.
That's right.
All right. Yeah, you go to WAMC.org. You can make your pledge, and we would love that. So let's go back to the phones with Chef Rick Orlando. Do you want to tell the story, what you told your students about farro?
Very simply. I could say it in a less promiscuous way.
Offensive way.
Offensive way. No, we had a rule in my restaurants that we wanted you to feel good when you came in the restaurant. We wanted you to really feel good when you ate the food, but we also wanted you to feel good 2 hours later. On our menu, it says, when we leave here, we want you to go home and dance. So you can interpret that any way you want, but the point was...
That wasn't the verb you used earlier.
No, of course.
But okay,
I'm on the radio now.
Okay, fine.
The point is, and as a rule of thumb when you're cooking in Sicily, if you still taste the food or burping or feel an hour and a half or 2 hours later, you didn't cook it right.
Failure.
You didn't cook it right. Even if it tastes good, you didn't cook it right.
So interesting.
Nothing like al dente beans. A lot of places I go now and you get a bean soup and the beans are hard. Al dente beans are not edible. They're not digestible. Cook them till they're soft.
Yeah.
And I love tender beans. Tender beans.
All right, just calm down, Chef Rick Orlando.
I love tender beans, man.
Let's go to Kevin in Averill Park.
Kevin,
get me out of this. You're on.
Hello.
Hey, you are.
Hey, Ray and Rick, my two favorites.
How you doing, buddy?
Silly question. I've been making soups for several decades.
Mm-hmm.
I tried pulling off some chilled soups 2 summers ago,
mm-hmm.
and you would have thought I was killing puppies. People just went crazy. You can't service it. And I must have heard the expression at least 6 times. I want my soup so hot it burns the roof of my mouth.
Oh, boy.
Rick, what temperatures do we want our soups at?
Well, you know what they say, cold soup cold, hot soup hot. For me, I don't like it so hot that it burns my mouth.
Yeah, why would you?
But some people, you know, they insist on hot soup. You know, that was another place that the microwave was for. People would say, the soup's not hot enough. Give it 3 minutes
Chef
in the
Mike,
microwave. Chef Mike, send it back out. But I think the soup obviously has to simmer, cook, you know, whatever you do, however you're cooking it. One of the phrases I used in my kitchen is when you're cooking soup and you're, or even stewing, you're braising it. You don't want it boiling, you want it simmering, but I would say to the cooks, you want your broth to be smiling, not laughing. So I think soup should go out between 160 and 180,
uh-huh.
which is good temperature. I happen to like hot soups cold the next day. I'll eat like, we made escarole and bean soup the other day.
That sounds not good.
Oh, it's delicious.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
The cold escarole with the soup and the...
In a loaf of Italian bread drizzled with hot chili oil? Come on.
Kevin,
it
help
big
me
sandwich.
Out here.
Come on, it was delicious. But I'll do that a lot. I'll have a little bit of cold soup, and I'll kind of just...
Rick can probably attest to it. A lot of chefs end up standing in front of their home refrigerator at midnight eating anything cold.
Yeah,
yeah.
You get home, and you say, oh, I didn't eat tonight. And they just shovel it in and go
ahead. You taste everything, too, and it's tender and delicious.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
All right. Well, hey, Kevin, you got anything else for us, or we move on?
No, just checking on that. I wanted some, somebody to endorse me that it doesn't have to hurt you to eat it.
But, I mean, if you're in business, and I know you're in business, you can't have it too hot or you got a potential lawsuit there, right?
Well,
it's like coffee between your knees.
Yeah.
Listen to your customers. I hate to say it, and I'm certainly not young, but I think that is something that comes older. Older people like are used to hot soup as a thing. It's like, hey, we need hot soup. Most important thing is serve it in a hot bowl. That way it doesn't cool down too fast. You put hot soup in a cold bowl and it immediately loses like 10% of its temperature and cools down. So always keep your bowls warm.
Okay.
And it shouldn't be a problem.
All right. And remember, Kevin, and you know
this.
Keep
the bowls warm. I'll take that with me.
All right.
Yeah, and it's not easy on the puppies.
And also, I mean, the rule of thumb, right, is the customer's always wrong. Isn't that the case?
No.
Oh, no, no. We go the other way. If they want it hot, it comes out like a volcano.
All right, brother. Well, thank you. Have a good weekend. 800-348-2551 is the number. William writes in, do you ever eat Bulgarian nettle soup? So delicious, so healthy. Since marrying her, I have cultivated a 100-square-foot nettle patch for my Bulgarian wife. We make the soup for months in the spring. You ever have that?
I have. You know what? I'm going to tell you something. I've had it in Bulgaria, believe it or not.
Yeah, makes sense.
Of course.
Right.
But it was the one we had in Bulgaria. They also had like... I'm not sure if it was potatoes. It was very kind of creamy and rich.
Yeah.
But nettles are great. Nettles are similar to spinach when you cook them, but you can't touch them until you cook them.
Because
they sting.
Right.
Right.
So why
but
does
somehow
cooking
once
get
you
rid of
once
it?
You cook them, the stinging part goes away.
So is it a toxin?
I don't. Yeah. I mean, it's
eating toxic nettles in Bulgaria.
A lot of food has toxins. Listen, Italians. Make nettle pestos, ravioli with nettles, filling.
Okay.
They use it the same as spinach. And it grows like a weed, and it's cool to grow. It comes up real early, like asparagus, like spring. You'll have your nettos by Memorial Day.
Do they grow them around here?
Oh, yeah, I grow them.
Okay, I might have done a foraging show where I was forced to eat nettles, but I don't remember. That wasn't all that
it's
memorable.
It's similar to spinach, a little more viscosity.
Do they grow on the side of the thruway?
You know?
Because then I probably did have them on that foraging
show. I'll take a look, yeah.
All right, let's go to Mike in Greenfield. Mike, you're on with Chef Rick Orlando.
Hey, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I got a question for you about the relationship between soup, bisque, stew, risotto, and other variations. When does one become the other, and what are the differences?
Very interesting. Well, I think that soup can be used as a general umbrella term. Right? Anything that's cooked in liquid and is served somewhat liquidy can be called a soup.
Yeah.
A bisque is normally an essence, like a stock, like a lobster stock, whatever, that's thickened traditionally with rice, and then in the old days they would run it through a sieve. Now they run it through the Vitamix, but a thickened soup, usually with a little dairy in it, but not necessary. But a stew, to me, the difference between a soup and a stew really is the size of the pieces. You can do whole chicken thighs in a chicken stew. Mm. You can do it in a chicken soup, too. But, I mean, you know, in general, you think of soup as something you can eat with a spoon, where a stew you can eat with a fork. Stews should be braised, cooked slowly, so everything is tender and all the flavors come together. A risotto is a completely different animal. That's a rice dish where you're adding hot broth to rice a little bit at a time and stirring it together and cooking the rice. So I would think that risotto is on a different page. But so that's, I mean, that's off the top of my head. That's what I'm thinking. What are you thinking, Mike?
And where would the chowder fit in all that family tree?
Whither the chowder?
Chowder. Well, being a guy who learned most of my chops in Boston, chowder.
Here we go.
Is usually a thickened seafood soup with potato, celery, onion, never a carrot. Don't put a carrot in my chowder. I'll kill you.
Oh, that's an old song. Don't put a carrot in my chowder.
And also, traditionally, salt pork. A lot of cooks use bacon now because it's easier to get, but salt pork. But a chowder is always thickened, right? It's thickened with fat and flour, and that's part of what, even the Rhode Island chowders, the fat and flour kind of makes it stick to your ribs, makes it heartier. And again, we talked about the commodity of calories when people didn't have the wealth of food that we had now. That was a way to fill people up by adding more calories to the soup because there wasn't enough food.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Let's talk about chowder for a minute.
Chowder.
So.
To H.
There are a lot of different kinds.
Yes.
Yeah, there's a Rhode Island one? I've never heard of this. Yeah. What's the difference?
Rhode Island chowder is basically clam chowder, but without any milk or cream. So it's a gray.
So it's Manhattan?
No tomato. It's a gray broth. It's like clam broth
what
with
potato.
What
makes it gray?
Well, the clam
the
broth.
Dirty water?
The clam broth kind of gives a minerally gray color, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't sound appetizing.
Oh, it's delicious.
Really?
Especially if you throw six or eight packs of oyster crackers in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know, here's something you don't do when you go to Maine. I found this out because I was slapped roundly by my wife. When you go to a restaurant in Maine and you get chowder and you say, oh, this is very good. Is this from a can? Never say that. I did say that once, and frankly, it was a couple of months before the bruises subsided.
So let me give you a suggestion that expands upon your suggestion.
Yes.
Never ask that in any restaurant ever.
Really?
You can ask your guest across from you, but never ask the restaurant because they won't tell you.
Well, they. I thought it was very good anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So
certain places now, a lot of the soups you get in, I'm not going to slag diners, but places that you know have a lot of it is they get these their bags. They're like kilo bags of soup that you add liquid to and fix them up yourself. Soup bases.
You know, another thing not to do up in New England when you ask for chowder, don't ask for Manhattan chowder.
No, Manhattan chowder is not chowder.
I love Manhattan chowder.
It is.
It's like tomato soup with some clams in it.
Yeah, a little bit. Pretty similar. I mean, it's got, I don't dislike Manhattan chowder, but I'm a New England guy.
Yeah.
Nice creamy chowder. We used to make, when I worked at in Faneuil Hall, basically, Quincy Market, we would make 100 gallons of chowder a day.
Wow.
We had these big 50-gallon steam kettles, and we would throw in sacks of what are called quahogs, the really big clams. We used to call them ashtray clams, and a little bit of water and let them steam open, and then we would run them through. Now we'd probably throw them through a meat grinder, but back then we had this really Kafka-esque device called a buffalo chopper. It was a three-bladed circular bowl that turned with three blades. It just turned and chopped all those clams up. But we would build our chowder.
Wow. You know what? That's why you're one of the all-time greats. All right. Listen, let's go to the phones. Let's get one more in here, and then I got an email from Emily that you could probably answer. Rue in New Paltz. New Paltz. Rue, you're on.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
All right, got a quick question for you. I've been yearning for a good eggplant parmesan. It's kind of hard to find a good Italian restaurant up in this neck of the woods. So I'm just going to go ahead and try to, you know, attempt this on my own. And can you guys help me out?
Okay.
Can I recommend a restaurant?
If you recommend more than, like, if two or one. Three, you can do a recommendation.
Okay, because, you know, there's a great pizza place that makes coal-fired pizza, and I'm not mentioning the name,
okay,
in New Paltz that makes a fabulous eggplant parmesan.
Okay.
Absolutely.
There you
great.
Go.
So there's a couple ways to do it. If you're on my Facebook, you'll see just 2 days ago I posted Sicilian eggplant parmesan where the eggplant is not breaded or floured, and it's cut thicker. It's cut maybe as thick as your pinky.
Yeah.
And you cook it, you salt it. You don't have to drain it. You don't have to soak it. That whole old school soaking and draining eggplant came from the days before the eggplant that we have has been modified to be less bitter. Our eggplant is much less bitter than it was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And you saute them in olive oil and then layer them with a little tomato sauce, maybe a leaf of basil, your cheese mix. I always like to use a salty cheese like a pecorino, mozzarella, and bake it. But if you want to bread it and fry it, you can Google it because we're running out of time, but the old breading station, right? Flour, egg, breadcrumb. Boom,
right.
And you pre-fry them.
Yeah.
And once you do that, what's cool about doing that, if you want to take the trouble to pre-fry your eggplant with the breading, you can do a lot of it. And when they're cool, wrap bundles up in plastic wrap and freeze them so that when you want to do it in the future, you can have it. But I'm not a fan of making the eggplant so thin that you don't get the texture of the eggplant.
Yeah.
When eggplant is cooked right, it's creamy. It's almost like pudding. It's really delicious, buddy. You know?
Now I'm hungry for eggplant.
Did that help?
Rue, thanks a lot for the call. Rue's gone. But we have a minute here. Emily wrote in, loves your suggestion of using cashew cream. Now, Emily's in the habit of substituting coconut oil for butter, coconut milk for milk or cream when she wants to make a non-dairy recipe. I wonder, says Emily, what you think about using coconut milk instead of dairy in a cream of broccoli or asparagus soup.
Well, the difference between cashew cream and coconut milk to me is the fact that really clear. Coconut milk tastes like coconut milk.
Yeah.
So if you're making that soup, it's going to have a coconut milk flavor. If you're good with that, enjoy. I mean, I would like that, I guess. But if you're looking for more of that comfort food cream of broccoli that you grew up with but no longer can have the dairy, cashew cream, I think, is a better option.
And Nicholas from Maine writes, stinging nettles definitely grow on the side of the thruway.
Ah.
So there you go.
So he probably got out of the thruway one time and didn't realize where he was standing on the highway because it was dark out and got little sores on his legs.
Okay. You know, it's not the end times yet, but I recommend not eating the food from the side of the thruway, you know, just for now. And when the end times come, you got to do what you got to do.
You know, I've seen them. My grandmother was one, but I've seen them in Queens on the Meridian between the highway.
Yeah.
You know, just picking dandelion greens and stuff. It's free food.
All right. Rick Orlando, we are finished here. How do people keep up with your comings and goings?
I'm very easy to find. I'm rickorlando.com.
R-I-C.
And I'm Chef Rick Orlando on all the social media platforms. That's how I promote everything. And I do direct email. So if you go to my website, you can get on my email list. But that's how I promote everything. My tours, my pop-ups, my cooking classes, my public appearances, and also other things that you may want to know about me.
Good luck with the pop-up tonight. It's tonight.
Tomorrow. Right? Tomorrow.
Tomorrow. And if people want to find out more once again about the food pantry in Woodstock, let us know.
Good Neighbor Food Pantry.
All right.
Good
man.
Neighbor Food Pantry of Woodstock.
We
feed a lot of people.
When are you going to Italy again?
I'll be leaving the end of April, coming back early June.
Oh, my gosh. We're still chatting here, and I have three underwriting credits to
Puglia
do.
Sicily. Do your credits.
All right, man. Support comes from Clock Estate, Hudson, New York, and Earth to Glass Brandy Distillery and Destination that features tours, tastings, fine dining, and a hilltop view of the entire northern Catskill Range. Clock-estate.com. Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, New York. Hard cider from local apples. Nine Pin Cider's new core cider, Ginger Mule, is now available. Open 7 days starting at 11 a.m. NinePinCider.com. All right, you know what? Thank you all very much. Have a lovely weekend. Thanks to Rick Orlando. Thanks to you. Thanks to Zach. Thanks to Barb King. God bless us, everyone. We'll see you Monday.